and gentlemen, I'm Melody Cederstrom, and you're listening to Financial Survival. My co-host today is Dave Allen, as we bring you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events. It is Wednesday, May 1st, 2019. Good afternoon, Dave.
Happy hump day, Melody.
Oh, hello there, too. And we have Wendy Wilson joining us today, as she does each and every Wednesday. And first, we're going to get... Yeah, I know. We have to get to the market report today, ladies and gentlemen. As much as I don't want to go there, but great buying opportunities again as we continue to have these great buying opportunity days. Little pressure on gold today. It was higher earlier in the day. In fact, 1288 as a high, and it dropped down to 1276, almost 1277. So down $7. Silver was down 30 cents. They whacked that 2%, $14.73. Platinum was down $25 at 866, with palladium down $38 at 1352. The USDX today is up 0.15 at 97.66. Crude oil was down 34 cents at 63.57. And the paper markets today, there was pressure on the Dow after the Fed came out about their announcement on the rate increase. The Dow fell 162 points at 26,430. I have to laugh, and we're going to talk about this when we come back from the break after Wendy's segment. I think they were really expecting, I can't believe that they were actually expecting a cut. But and they said once the markets didn't get it, that's why we had the couple points, 162 points down today. But we'll talk about it and get a little more into detail at 26,430 on the Dow. The NASDAQ was down 45, 8,049. The S&P was down 22, 2,923. I think it has more to do with the dollar. But anyway, the 10-year yield, 2.51%. European Asian markets were quiet. And, you know, it just seems to be like another day in the neighborhood. So, with that, we're going to talk a lot about, there is a lot of things in the news today. And but first, we have Wendy Wilson joining us from Apothecary Herbs. Good afternoon, Wendy.
Good afternoon, Melody. And hello, Dave.
Hi.
I thought we'd talk about the great pox. Syphilis is back with a vengeance. Have you heard about this in the health reports?
Oh, no, I haven't.
Oh, well, you know, we all thought
it was... not something I go looking for.
Well, I know, but we all thought it was dead, eradicated with, you know, the invention of penicillin, but it is now resistant to a lot of the antibiotics that they use for it. So they introduced penicillin to this problem in 1940, and, of course, medicine was boasting we got rid of that. This is really a bacterial infection. That's what syphilis is, and it is primarily spread through sexual conduct or contact, but also with skin contact of mucous membranes. So a person normally diagnosed with syphilis is usually done through a blood test or a spinal tap, where they take spinal fluid and they run it through the lab. But syphilis, in some instances, people don't even recognize that they have it. And so if it goes untreated, it starts to damage your heart, your blood vessels, your brain, and your nervous system. So there's also a risk of blindness and paralysis. And history has shown us that in many cultures that have suffered from an outbreak of this disease, it often brought on diminished mental health. So when powerful leaders contracted syphilis, we see an abuse of the citizens. Examples would be Ivan the Terrible and King Henry VIII. Now, in modern treatment, right, yeah, in our modern world, though, there's also an increased risk of contracting also HIV and AIDS. So it used to be that if you sought treatment for syphilis within 1 year of getting it, all you needed was one injection of penicillin. But if you waited past a year, then you were going to need several injections of penicillin to get rid of it. Now, the CDC is not recommending that the doctors use what are called antibiotic combination drugs to treat the drug-resistant syphilis, since some treatments of bacterial infections are going that way. So syphilis, if you get infected with it, it happens in stages. The first stage usually will indicate to you within 2 to 4 weeks of contracting it, you may get a sore that's painless, and the sore is short-lived. It usually leaves a scar after it's healed. However, your lymph nodes in the groin area become inflamed and enlarged. So, but most people just, you know, brush that off as, you know, I overdid it working out, and that's why I feel sore. And they don't think much of a sore that comes and goes. Now, the second stage is usually skin and the mucous membranes. You get rashes within a few months after that first sore appears. This rash is also painless, and it doesn't itch. It tends to clear up by itself in a few weeks, and there could be also swollen joint pain or even bone pain in this stage, and your lymph nodes remain swollen. Also, your eyes can become sore, and you may develop earaches and an enlarged liver and spleen. Then you get the latent stage. Now, this is where the bacterial infection will lay dormant for a few years. And there aren't any outward symptoms except for maybe some severe form of arthritis that usually attacks the knees. Now, you could get a heart infection during the latent stage as well. And the brain can be affected, or any internal organ can have an ulceration happen to it. And then those ulcerations are usually difficult to heal. A lot of tissue destruction occurs during the latent stage. You can get ulcer after ulcer. They can occur, and the person may find it difficult to heal those up as well. And you are infectious, so you can pass this on to other people. Now, the final stage is when the bacterial infection becomes very destructive to all tissues, lots of inflammation, even growths now start to appear, and it also can manifest in the form of aneurysms, a lot of heart disease, dementia, and paralysis. So, now, since syphilis seems to mimic other symptoms, guess what? Other medical conditions, you know, it mimics those. So the patients are at high risk of falling through the cracks with a misdiagnosis during that very important first stage. And the reason that patients are falling through the cracks here is because the medical students haven't been getting any training or very little training on syphilis since medicine considered the disease to be under control or eradicated with antibiotics. So the doctors don't know what they're looking for in many cases, and they're not focusing on that because they didn't get a whole lot of training on it. Other medical textbooks often warned physicians, syphilis is referred to as the great imitator. So it imitates other conditions, so you have to be real careful about that. So blood test is really, really required. Now, getting back to your eyes, one of the complications with syphilis is vision loss and a lot of inflammation of the eye. So you can also develop cataracts, glaucoma, retinal scarring, and a detachment of the retina. And ophthalmologists, get this, they're noticing these cases of eye inflammation that's due to syphilis inflammation. And they're the ones catching it, but it's not in the first stage usually. It's usually in the second stage. So that delay in treatment is really causing a lot of vision complication and increases that risk of vision loss. So you can have syphilis for as little as 3 months. And if you don't get treatment, you could be risking being able to reverse the risk of vision complications. So it's real important to get that. Here's a Medical Express said this in February of this year. They said ophthalmologists who specialize in a lot of eye inflammation are identifying the lack of medical expertise for the diagnosis of syphilis as an important reason in the delay of treatment. So doctors are missing this. And I'm missing it a lot because their training's not complete. That's the only way I can say it. Now, according to research from the Kirby Institute, the University of South Wales in Australia, Here are some of the statistical rates on syphilis that's been increasing. They reported that between 2010 and 2017, there's been a 250% increase in the cases in both men and women. And the statistic is high in high-income countries, they say, all across the globe. So this isn't just, you know, an Australia problem, a UK problem, or a United States problem. It's around. Now, they say the contributing factors is mass travel, less concern about safe sex, new drugs for sexual dysfunction. And according to WebMD, the medical science is attempting to use, get this, 127 different drugs to try to treat syphilis and the side effects, because it's now resistant to penicillin, and they have a primary need now to treat it with something else other than penicillin. And there's a lot of people out there that are allergic to penicillin, and what do? You know, they don't have anything at all.
Well,
so I know
there's one thing they can do, but anyway,
well, they should have done that before.
Before.
well, this is true. And really, the treatment, your treatment's going to depend on, you know, what stage you're identified at, you know, when you're diagnosed. So the early diagnosis is important. Now, according to a lot of health experts, a person can catch syphilis more than once. So let's say you got it and the penicillin pretty much eradicated it for you, and then somewhere down the road you're exposed to it again. Well, you can get it again. And also, they say safe sex prevention methods can offer some protection, but it's not 100% protection. Inexpensive blood tests, they say, will check for the disease. And if you're sexually active, if you have many sexual partners, you need to check your blood frequently. So if you have rashes, if you have ulcers or eye inflammation, a blood test is definitely needed. So healthcare professionals need also to be retrained in this disease, and also the general public needs to also be aware of the reemergence of this drug-resistant syphilis. And let me ask you this. Do you think the only way to get syphilis is through sexual contact?
Yes.
Okay. What do you think, Mel?
Well, a couple of things that you said, I would say no.
Well, you're absolutely right. Now, backing up to the Journal
pay
of the American
Medical Dave.
Yeah, pay attention, Dave. Backing up to the Journal of the American Medical Association, 1982, they were sounding the alarm, a call to action regarding a problem in syphilis, because it was becoming an epidemiological problem, to the point where the disease was actually changing a number of different diseases that were listed as STDs. So the syphilis bacterial organism dies after a few minutes when it's exposed to cold or dry environments. So it tends to thrive in moist, warm environments. Okay. So medical professionals often tell patients the bacteria is transmitted through sexual contact. But what people aren't told is the bacteria can also be transferred by kissing, contaminated needles, contaminated clothing, and toilet seats and other surfaces. So if
Good
it's there
grief.
If it's there and it's not cold and dry, it can stay there a while. So basically what syphilis is a poison. It's a bacterial poison to the body. And physicians down through the centuries would successfully treat syphilis without any side effects. And what their protocol was, they changed the diet, because when you change the diet, you change the body environment. So they would remove all the animal meats from the diet. They would remove all tea and coffee or any stimulating foods or beverages. They would remove shellfish and tobacco. And for some reason, they didn't want you eating condiments, I guess because they were fermented. And these dietary restrictions did one thing. They accomplished a different environment within the body to help kill the bacteria. Then they also used some medicinal herbs, and they said in overall, it would take a year for this person to get rid of syphilis. So it's not something that will happen in a week or two. They would use herbs like oregano, grapefruit, UV reversi leaf, burdock root, red clover, prickly ash, poke root, blood root. Now, these are purifiers. These herbs purify blood, okay? They would use black walnut and sarsaparilla. And what they would also do is they would wash any ulcers or sores with golden seal root and myrrh tea, and also dab it with a little black walnut because it contained natural iodine. And then they would often, to fast track the poisons coming out of the system, they would use some sweat therapy. So a lot of times, you know, sweat tents, saunas, hot springs, they would do that. But they had to isolate people and keep them bathing by themselves and then cleaning up their dressing materials properly so it didn't spread the bacteria. So lots of things to do, lots of protocols. It's a little work, but when you don't have an antibiotics that's working anymore, this is what you got to do.
Well, very interesting. And you know what? That was something that, you know, it's in the world that we live today, you wonder how many people are walking around and don't know they have it.
Right. Well, many of the herbs we have at Apothecary Herbs and Formulas, so if anybody's interested, they call toll-free at 866-229-3663. We also have the new product catalog, which I sent you, by the way, Melanie, so it's on its way.
All right, fantastic. I can't wait to receive it.
Yeah, and we just started our Mother's Day special, so it's 20% off orders of $50 or more through the 12th. Now's the time.
All right.
Powerherbs.com.
Thank you, Wendy.
Bye.
We'll see you. We'll talk to you next Wednesday. Have a great week, ladies and gentlemen. We'll be right back right here in just a few moments.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it. Nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom and CSE Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interests of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit csctalkradio.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188, or online at dgscoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together, working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
And welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading. 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. And visit the website at dgscoins.com, dgscoins.com. And the reason I'm having some technical problems, And so I'm just going to have to kind of wing it along with Dave here as I try to fix my issue. So go ahead, Dave. And I think we were going to start out by talking about the Fed, and the reason the Dow was down a little bit was because everybody was a little bummed because the chairman, Jerome Powell, decided not to cut rates. Boo-hoo.
Yeah, well, it wasn't just him. It was a unanimous decision. Federal Open Market Committee voted unanimously today to hold the current range of the federal funds rate to 2.25 to 2.5. That'll remain steady at least until the next time they meet. The committee did, however, make a technical adjustment, which is aimed at keeping the Fed funds rate closer to the midpoint of the target range. That is, interest on excess reserves that banks keep at the Fed will now be paid at 2.35%. That's actually 5 basis points lower, than it was before. Now, prior to two similar adjustments last year, the Fed had been raising the funds rate and the reserves rate in tandem, with the latter acting as a cap for the benchmark rate. However, the funds have been drifting to the top of its range, most recently trading at 2.45%. Banks are currently holding $1.56 trillion at the Fed. So the committee did offer another language tweak. It reflects the lackluster inflation picture. The statement released by the Fed said that on a 12-month basis, overall inflation and inflation for items other than food and energy have declined and are running below 2%. Some like John Williams of ShadowStats.com might have an issue with that, but be that as it may, the Fed is easing up on policy a little bit. Starting Thursday, the committee lowered the cap on the amount of treasuries that'll roll off its balance sheet each month. Up to $30 billion had been allowed to roll, and that's a level that will now decrease by one-half to $15 billion a month. The Fed's balance sheet is currently just shy of $3.9 trillion, most of which is it's composed of treasuries and mortgage-backed securities. Melody.
All righty. Yeah, yesterday we did talk about this a little bit, about how President Trump was calling on the Fed to cut rates by a point, and there was a two-part tweet yesterday that we had talked about, and I was a little fired up on it yesterday, Dave, as you might well have guessed.
Sorry,
but
I missed it.
You missed it. I'm a little more mellow today, but course we know that the Fed currently targets its interest rate, the benchmark interest rate, in a range between 2.25% and 2.5%, and that they've had 9 hikes since 2015. So, and again, Dave, they talk about this lack of inflation.
Yeah, it's true. The personal consumption's expenditure index showed a gain of just 1.6% over the past year. That again is excluding the volatile food and energy prices. And this lack of inflation is the reason that Larry Kudlow and Trump himself, as well as others, believe the Fed can cut rates by at least a percentage point without risk. The Fed normally tightens policy in an effort to control prices when the economy is expanding, like it is, 3.2% in the first quarter. So, but the president also is calling for additional quantitative easing. We know the Fed instituted 3 rounds of easing during and after the crisis in 2008 in an effort to lower long-term rates and encourage a flow of money into risk assets like stocks and corporate bonds. There have been no indications the Fed's contemplating a new round of QE, although the St. Louis Fed has been floating the idea, which we talked about the other day, It's this new repurchase product that some economists say would act as a form of easing.
Well, with that and along with the $2 trillion, for infrastructure spending, you know, I guess the economy could keep on churning, and as long as the American people have the money to pay for it. But, you know, as long
as they're willing... that last part?
Yeah. So now what is the family of four, how much do they owe now? You know, they count, you know, hundreds of thousands of dollars that they owe per family of four, I think. It's significant, but... well, you know, we had Herman Cain step out from a running to be part of the Fed, and now there are some Republican senators that are beginning to vocalize their opposition to Stephen Moore. And, of course, Stephen Moore is President Trump's nominee for the Federal Reserve Board of Governors. And, you know, there's always been a lot of criticism that he was unfit for the job. You have Republican Senators Joni Ernst of Iowa and of course, Lindsey Graham of South Carolina. So they're just not confident in Moore. More economists have called out Moore as a partisan pick, more known for promoting conservative fiscal policy than for having any type of economic expertise. So, you know, we'll have to... I'm not sure why Graham is... kind of poo-pooing Moore when he's such a supporter of Trump, Dave.
That's a good question. He did say that Moore was going to be problematic. It was $181,000, by the way, per taxpayer, that all that debt. You know, Moore... as listeners may recall, was one of the masterminds behind that disastrous 2012 tax cut experiment in Kansas that led to state revenues falling by $700 million almost immediately. Now, you know, in the heels of Herman Cain's requested withdrawal from, you know, as being a pick be nominated for the other vacancy, it leaves the president possibly with two vacancies. So administration, which is already preoccupied by other things, has its work cut out for it, it looks like, Melody, when it comes to the Fed.
Well, yeah, you're right. There certainly are a lot of distractions out there. You know, I mean, I saw a headline today where Russia has installed nukes in Venezuela.
Fake news.
I can't buy that. You know, I think we would know. You know, but still, there's certainly a lot of things. Nasty things that are happening down there in Venezuela, and you know, and I would think Maduro is, you know, he tried to leave, I guess, but supposedly he was talked back. I don't know if that was propaganda or not. Who knows? Because you're getting propaganda from both sides, and I guess the only thing that we can do to figure out, you know, is wait until it unfolds, and you know, and whether we get the truth on either side, who knows? But you know, they'll be at the bottom line. It was funny, I heard someone say today, Dave, that, you know, they'll be replacing the communist Maduro and installing the socialist Guaido. And I'm thinking...
the more things change...
the more they stay the same. Yeah, you're right, you're right. And it's the same with our economy and adding jobs in April. You betcha. You know, that the ADP came out today, and Moody's Analytics with their early release of their estimate for private payrolls. And they said it grew about 275,000 last month. And, of course, this is the biggest increase since July. There was a range anywhere from economists saying it would grow by 177,000 to you know, to where it is, 275. So there's a wide range of estimates. Education and health service companies added 54,000 jobs, while employment within the leisure and hospitality industry expanded by 53,000. Goods producing jobs, which includes construction, manufacturing, mining, that rose by 52,000, led by a 49,000 payrolls increase in construction.
Well, your favorite category, Melody, manufacturing, added just 5,000 jobs. Mining employment actually declined by 2,000, actually no surprise there. Overall, medium-sized businesses that employ between 50 and 499 people led the way last month with 145,000 jobs. Zandi, who's Moody's chief economist, said the job market is holding firm as businesses work hard to fill open positions. You know, and he said that he expects the government's official jobs report, which always comes out Friday after the Wednesday of this release, will come in closer to expectations of $180,000 people. Excuse me. So, big divergence there.
Yeah, it is, and I would expect it to be around 182 unless they go nuts and do some crazy numbers. But we have to remember that the month before, was it March, that was 59,000. No, was it February? February was 59,000. And then they had that surprise jump last month. So I think, I figured they would resettle this month. This is interesting. Banks, $2 billion on political activities last year. Wall Street banks, of course, and other parts of the financial sector spent close to $2 billion on lobbying and campaign contributions in the 2018 election cycle. And that's a 36% jump from the last non-presidential campaign year. You have Americans for Financial Reform found banks and financial institutions dramatically increased their political spending as Congress passed legislation last year that rolled back several regulations put into place after the 2008 financial crisis. And the surge in Wall Street's political spending came as commercial banks saw record profits, in part because the tax law of 2017 also lowered their overall tax burden. So Wall Street spent more during the 2018 midterm elections than it ever has on a non-presidential campaign cycle.
I guess on the one hand, it's not altogether surprising, but it is eye-opening, nevertheless. Now, critics say this glut in lobbying and campaign contributions show how Wall Street manipulates federal lawmakers, as they seek an advantage over the opposition over proposed legislation. You know, overall, financial sector companies and their employees gave about $922 million in the 2017-2018 campaign cycle, while also reporting about $957 million on lobbying. That brings it up to about 1.9 or the rounded $2 billion figure. So, you know, as we reported last year in March of 2018, the president signed into law a bill that eased regulations for banks somewhat, especially those with $50 billion to $250 billion in annual assets, the so-called not too big to fail banks. You know, they've also faced criticism for increasing their bets on lucrative but very risky loans, also with the help of federal regulators and members of Congress.
You know, Dave, it might be at the heart of the spring housing season, but the mortgage market isn't seeing big business. Mortgage application volume fell 4.3% last week from the previous week. Now, this is all according to the Mortgage Bankers Association, and volume was 4.5% higher annually thanks to a stronger refinance activity. So applications to refinance a home loan were 5% lower for the week. They were still 11% higher than a year ago. The average contract interest rate for a 30-year fixed-rate mortgage of $484,000 or less decreased to 4.42%.
Yeah, Joel Kahn, who is the MBA's Associate Vice President of Economic and Industry Forecasting, pointed out that mortgage rates were lower last week because of concerns over global growth, particularly in Germany, having outweighed more positive domestic news, such as the first quarter GDP growth and rising business investment. You know, that lower rates didn't get more buyers off the fence. The mortgage apps to purchase a home fell 4% and were barely 1% higher than a year ago. So we'll see what happens. Sales of newly built homes jumped in March. That sales surge may have been due to that sharp drop in mortgage rates that Melody just mentioned. Rates have since edged a little bit higher, but not by much.
Well, we've also seen properties, the sales of homes that are listed at 2 million and above fell 16% in the first quarter. This is the sharpest annual decline since 2010, and I would think it probably has a lot to do with the tax reform. And this says the supply of those homes rose 14%, marking four straight quarters of annual increases in inventory. The average price of a luxury home is defined as the top 5% in each of the 1,000 cities it tracks, and this is tracked by Redfin. That fell 1.6% to 1.55 million. Non-luxury homes saw their average price rise 2.7% annually to $300,000. And it just amazes me. $300,000 is a median house price. It's just it's just unbelievable. Anyway, maybe it's only shocking to me. I don't know. But what's shocking to me is we're heading into a break so soon. We'll be right back, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Financial Survival. I'm Melody Cedarstrom, and I'm here with Dave Allen.
Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
We all know that Berkey Water Purification Systems are the most trusted name in water filtration. As an authorized Berkey dealer for over 6 years and serving thousands of satisfied customers, the Berkey Guy offers amazing specials for Berkey Water Filtration Systems. The Berkey Light Systems include a set of self-sterilizing and recleanable black purification elements that purify water by removing chlorine, pathogenic bacteria, cysts, and parasites to non-detectable levels and remove harmful chemicals such as herbicides and pesticides. Order the Berkey Light System today, complete with two black Berkey elements for only $231, and the Berkey Guy will ship your order free of charge. With the purchase of a Berkey Light, the Berkey Guy is also offering a set of fluoride and arsenic filters for only $39.99. That's over 30% off the retail price. Call the Berkey Guy at 1-877-886-3653. That's 1-877-886-3653. Or order online at GoBerkey.com. That's GoBerkey.com. Today.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 800-375-4188. Now, this came along as I saw this headline, Dynamic Pricing, Dave. And I guess this is the latest phase of the desperate race to survive against Amazon's immense selling power. And the brick-and-mortar stores are increasingly using one of the retail giant's most potent practices. It's called dynamic pricing. It's a very popular tactic where a seller constantly adjusts the price of its products. For example, hiking hotel prices during a big convention benefits both buyers and sellers. Its defenders, those who defend it are arguing back and forth. But as pricing is increasingly automated, the dangers include the gouging and, of course, discrimination, Dave.
Well, you know, we better hold on to our pocketbooks, Melody.
Yeah.
Put away that Discount Gold and Silver Trading debit card, because when stores see that, they're gonna push a button, and all of a sudden that 10% discount's gonna turn into a 20% premium. Yeah, you know, I say that obviously tongue in cheek, but that's kind of, you know, what this dynamic pricing is at its extreme. You know, unlike mom and pop retailers who, you know, you set the price at $1.99 and you leave it alone. You know, you're going to see prices fluctuate for transportation. You know, when shopping for an airline ticket, paying for a tank of gas even, which to some extent happens now anyway. But other sectors apparently are experimenting with it. Grocery stores are installing electronic price tags on their shelves that allows them to remotely change the entire store's prices based on, you know, given product supply or how many people, you know, are shopping at any given time. Restaurants are testing whether people are going to be willing to pay a premium during their busy times. I would certainly be reluctant to do that. It's just the beginning, they say. Dynamic pricing is inevitable, says Alec Schartzis, who's a CEO of The Perfect Price. That's a startup company that sells software allowing companies to deploy the practice on their own wares. Melody, we live in interesting times.
We certainly do. And speaking of interesting times, it's time for our Brevity is Golden. And robots are not welcome in our homes. Why is that?
Well, I'm afraid it's so, Melody. You know, Jane and George Jetson, I'm sorry to say, we just don't want robots in our home yet anyway. Smart speakers like Amazon's Echo, they're the closest thing to must-have home hardware right now, and they're a far cry from a real robot. You know, the biggest market for these so-called bots at home, you know, is still for vacuums like Roomba, which have been around for nearly two decades. Now, as of last fall, the robotic startup Anki, A-N-K-I, seemed to be winning where other companies had fallen short. You know, making a go of a consumer robot that was more fun but less powerful than a smartphone. But the maker of, you know, toy-like robots, Cosmo and Vector, they suffered the same fate. Both announcing this week they were shutting down, laying off the entire staff despite having raised more than $200 million in funding. You know, AI without a body has caught on really well, according to Jan Fossett. He's head of a research lab at Toronto-based Click Health. But physical robots, they're not really catching up, at least yet. For one thing, they simply cost too much, especially for the marginal service they offer. Building robots is hard enough, but building a robotics company seems nearly impossible right now. The latest in a wave of robotic companies, you know, to fold is Anki. It's a 9-year-old company that built cute robot companions and AI-powered toy race cars. It had raised more than $200 million in venture capital and said last year it was nearing $100 million in revenue. Things were looking good for them back in 2013 when it launched its first product, a $200 toy race car and video game. Yeah, but after the racers, its next wave of products were friendly companion bots, little bulldozer-looking things with expressive eyes that make cute noises. But this week, after losing out on what Anki called a significant financial deal at a late stage, the company's laying off its entire workforce. You know, at a robot summit hosted by TechCrunch earlier in April, several speakers discussed why building a robotics company is so hard. Melanie Wise explained that, you know, starting out, the hardest thing is finding the right problem to solve and making sure that people, you know, want you to actually solve it. You know, we know people pick apples. We know how much they charge for picking them. It's a daunting technical challenge, but someone will probably want an apple picking bot if you can create it and beat the cost of human pickers. For now, however, the Jetsons' housekeeper, Rosie, will just have to keep her own company while the prices come down and demand comes up. That, Melody, is this week's Brevity is Golden.
Thank you, Dave. James Corbett, usually I will speak to James Corbett on Wednesday, and we replay the broadcast on Friday, but he is on vacation, on holiday, his family. And I think they went to Vietnam, he told me, because there's a big celebration taking place in Japan. And this is where James Corbett lives, in Japan. And that celebration is in to Japan's former Crown Prince Naruhito, formally took his place as emperor today. So Japan has a new emperor. And in short, silent, and solemn ceremony in the Imperial's Palace's Pine Chamber. Now, this comes a day after Naruhito's 85-year-old father abdicated to pass the role to a younger generation. Now, this 59-year-old Naruhito now takes on the challenge of carrying forward the legacy of his father. And he does seek to modernize the imperial family, of course, within the tight bonds of tradition, and also to maintain its relevance in contemporary Japan while respecting a strict prohibition on anything deemed political. So Naruhito's accession of is a reminder of the gender inequality at the heart of the conservative imperial system. So
yeah, I didn't know this, Melody, but under Japanese law, you know, his daughter, the Empress Masako, Princess Aiko, is the daughter's name, is not allowed to inherit the throne. And his wife, Masako, is thought to have come under intense pressure within the palace to produce a male heir. So, you know, that's interesting. I didn't realize. I guess it shouldn't come as a surprise that, you know, such a I won't necessarily say antiquated out of respect to the Japanese, but you know, it's almost like an anachronism that it would be so male oriented and lacking female participation. There's one woman, though, attending the ceremony for the first time in modern history, the government minister. So that'll be interesting. In any event,
their history is so steep. And, I mean, it's their tradition is so
absolutely.
And so, yeah, I don't see any, you know. However, with their population being so aged, they might just have to change, and that might be part of the changing of their acceptance of maybe more women and so forth, you know, just because, you know, they don't have any young people to work.
Yep. Interesting.
We talked a little bit about Venezuela, and I guess there's another day of upheaval today, as both the opposition and Maduro's loyalists vowed to take to the streets. You've seen people walking their dogs through the streets in the capital littered with shotgun shells, tear gas canisters, and a charred motorcycle, where there's been skirmishes between the opposition and state security broke out a day before. It truly was a war zone. And I mean, I saw the two tanks, you know, of course they showed that on a lot of the stations, the two tanks
running over people.
But you know, hey, if I saw a tank coming my way, I'd kind of get out of the way, but that's just me.
Looked like the one must have stepped on the accelerator, because he seemed to be going a little bit, I don't know, we'll say a moderate speed at best, and all of a sudden, you know, he ramped up over the curb and boom. Poor people were in the way.
Yeah, but so again, there's a lot going on there. We talked a little bit about that as to where we think we'll see it headed, Dave.
Yeah, hopefully no nukes in Venezuela. But, Maduro's being defiant.
Yeah.
And, we're not sure, you know, the story about him having made it to the airport, presumably to leave the country, you know, when all of a sudden he receives a phone call and was told to turn around by Putin, whether that's real or part of the propaganda campaign. But, Guaido is certainly not backing down whatsoever. And I found today the video of him, you know, with his arm up, you know, calling on, you know, people to protest again with members of the military and police in the background. That was very interesting, I found. And so it's things in our hemisphere are ramping up, and it doesn't look like this country with a million plus percent inflation is going to heal itself anytime soon.
Well, you know, another place that are having protests, May Day protests, of course, is Paris. You have thousands of protesters that marched through the streets of Paris and other French cities today in a May Day labor demonstration. This is an annual event that carried unusual venom in the era of France's Yellow Vest movement. And what has become a familiar scene in the French capital, of course, police fired tear gas at the demonstrators as they continued to stream through the posh neighborhoods. The Interior Ministry announced by mid-afternoon, roughly 151,000 demonstrators had turned out nationwide, an estimated 16,000 of them in Paris. More than 7,000 police officers were dispatched to safeguard the city. The May Day protest is a routine occurrence in France, as I mentioned, and a staple of life in one of Europe's proudest welfare states.
Yeah, we know over the last 5-6 months, France has been really rocked by this Yellow Vest movement, which is, we've reported in the past, is this loose coalition of leftists and anarchists who condemn rising social inequality as they see it, and the perceived indifference of President Emmanuel Macron to their concerns. Now, you know, the Yellow Vest protesters have attacked carbon taxes and pension cuts, and in general highlighted a sense of abandonment shared by many, particularly in rural areas, far from affluent urban enclaves. That sounds a little bit familiar, too familiar. Union organizers expressed regret for what they saw as a small minority attempting to hijack a legitimate protest for their own ends. This has nothing to do with International Labor Day, a union official said, referring to the May 1st, demonstrations in the streets.
Well, you know, now we're going to go, we're going around the world today, Dave.
This is exciting.
Isn't it? Secretary of State Mike Pompeo is heading to Europe next week. He's on a four-nation trip. And the State Department says Pompeo is going to visit Finland, Germany, Britain, and Greenland for discussions on Russia and China, as well as Syria. I'm not sure if it was you or I or if it was on yesterday's program we were talking about. We're getting very little news on any of these wars that are going on that we're involved in. I mean, you don't hear anything more about Afghanistan. There's no news coming from there. Syria, we were talking about Yemen. But so we do know that this administration is at odds with numerous European allies over trade. Their support for proposed Russian gas pipeline and the use of the Chinese 5G technology. In Finland, Pompeo will deliver a speech on the U.S. policy in the Arctic, and that's a region that is becoming a point of friction between Washington and Moscow. Pompeo will then travel to Berlin for talks with Angela Merkel and then to London to meet the Prime Minister Theresa May. And even Brexit, you know, after she got her little reprieve until this fall, you don't hear anything. You don't hear anybody mention Brexit anymore. And then he's going to wrap it up where he will see if senior officials from Greenland and Denmark.
Yeah, and I'll be curious to see his reception. And when is Trump supposed to visit the Queen? Isn't that coming up?
Oh, that's a good question. We'll have to look that up and talk about the future trips of President Trump.
Sounds like it'll have to be for another program.
Another program. And I'll be back tomorrow, ladies and gentlemen. Until then, be safe, good night, and God bless.
Bye-bye.